You know, in material science, we're always talking about this holy grail for automotive steel. You want something incredibly strong for safety, but also super ductile so you can stamp it into complex shapes. And of course, you want it to be cheap.
But there's this huge invisible asterisk on that whole wish list, isn't there?
The hydrogen asterisk.
It's a total paradox of modern metallurgy. The stronger and more, more advanced we make these steels, the more vulnerable they seem to become to the smallest little element in the universe.
And that is exactly what we are tackling today. We're not doing a Chem 101 review of what hydrogen is. If you're listening to this, you already know it's a huge problem. We're looking at how it kills these advanced alloys. So we are doing a deep dive into a doctoral thesis by Jo-Hyun Ryu from POSTEC, specifically on trip and Toibip steels.
And Ryu's work is just so significant because he goes way beyond the general hydrogen is bad story. He really dissects the specific micromechanism.
Very nitty-gritty.
Exactly. He's looking at how hydrogen interacts with the steel lattice while it's actually deforming, during the car crash or when the part is being stamped.
That's a vital distinction, right? It's
Please.
not about hydrogen just sitting there in a static bar of metal.
No.
It's about mobile hydrogen in a dynamic system. Ryu is basically doing a forensic analysis of a crime scene that's happening at the atomic level.
He really is. And to get what he found, we have to start with the basic environment. We're dealing with the iron lattice, and hydrogen is just so small, about an angstrom in diameter, it can just diffuse right through the gaps.
Slipping between the iron atoms.
Yeah.
But as Ryu points out, it's not just like a casual swim through the metal. It's all about these things called traps.
This is the core concept. The lattice is never perfect. It's full of defects.
Okay.
Things like dislocations, which are like wrinkles in the atomic structure, grain boundaries, vacancies where an atom is missing. These defects have a binding energy with hydrogen. They sort of pull the hydrogen in and hold it there.
And that's usually where the trouble begins. You get this accumulation.
Accumulation leads to all sorts of bad things. Local pressure can build up, or you get what's called decohesion, which basically just lowers the energy needed to pull the atoms apart.
Okay.
But, and this is critical for the whole conversation, Ryu forces us to look at the crystal structure. We have to distinguish between ferrite and austenite right now, or none of this will make sense.
Right. Ferrite is the body-centered cubic structure, the BCC.
Which is pretty loosely packed, but it has a very, very low solubility for hydrogen. It's like a tiny room, it fills up almost instantly.
And that's versus austenite, which is the face-centered cubic or FCC structure.
Which is much more densely packed, but, and this is counterintuitive, it has much larger interstitial sites, larger gaps.
Booty can hold more.
It acts like a massive reservoir. It can hold a tremendous amount of hydrogen, a real sponge.
High solubility, but low diffusivity. The hydrogen gets in, but it moves slowly.
That's the setup. You have the sponge, which is austenite, and the conductor, which is more like ferrite. So Ryu's first big investigation was on trip steel, transformation-induced plasticity.
This is the shapeshifter. The whole point of trip steel is that it has these pockets of retained austenite at room temperature when you stress it, say, in a crash.
That austenite transforms into martensite.
A super hard, super strong phase, great for absorbing energy.
But it's also very brittle, and we know martensite is incredibly sensitive to hydrogen embrittlement. So Ryu set up this experiment to see exactly how this transformation plays out with hydrogen in the mix. He compared two alloys, a low aluminum one and a high aluminum one.
And on paper, they looked pretty similar, didn't they?
Very similar. Both had a lot of retained austenite, but when he tensile tested them, their behavior was completely different. The low alloy failed early, the high alloy held up.
And I love the methodology here. He didn't just pull the bars apart, he used digital image correlation, or DIC.
It is a fantastic technique for this. You basically spray a random pattern of little black dots onto the white painted surface of your sample.
Like a fine mist of toner powder or something.
Exactly. Then you put it under a microscope, and as you stretch it, cameras track how every single one of those speckles moves.
So it creates a strain map. You can literally see in real time which parts of the metal are stretching and which aren't.
And when Ryu looked at these maps, he saw something crucial. In the high aluminum alloy, the strain wasn't being spread out evenly at all. It was all concentrating in the ferrite grains.
So the ferrite was taking the hit.
It was. The ferrite in that HAL alloy was massive and soft. It was acting like a sacrificial buffer. This is what he calls strain partitioning. The soft ferrite deformed, and in doing so, it shielded the little islands of austenite from the stress.
And because the austenite wasn't seeing the stress, it didn't transform.
Not at first, anyway. And that is the absolute key. Remember, austenite is the hydrogen sponge.
Right.
It's holding all that hydrogen, trapped nice and snug inside its FCC structure.
As long as it stays austenite, the hydrogen is relatively safe. It's contained.
But in the low aluminum alloy, that wasn't happening. The strain was shared, the austenite transformed early.
And that's what triggers the disaster. This is the big mechanism. When that FCC austenite suddenly flips to BCT martensite, two things happen instantly. One, the solubility for hydrogen just drops through the floor. The new lattice cannot hold that much hydrogen.
And the other thing, the diffusivity skyrockets.
The hydrogen is expelled. It's literally pumped out of that transforming grain, and it finds itself in fresh, brittle martensite, which lets it move incredibly fast.
So it just races to the nearest crack tip or grain boundary?
That's it.
It's a mechanism of betrayal. The very feature that's designed to save you, that phase transformation, is what delivers the poison right to the point of failure.
And reused data showed it perfectly. The high aluminum alloy survived because that soft ferrite delayed the transformation. It kept the hydrogen locked away in its austenite prison until the very last moment. So for trip steel, the fix is actually mechanical. It's about managing the microstructure to control when the phase change happens.
It's all about strain management. You have to force the ferrite to carry the load first. Keep that austenite stable for as long as you can.
Okay, so that sort of solves the trip mystery. But then he pivots to TYP steel. Twinning-induced plasticity. And this feels like a harder problem because TELE-YP is fully austenitic.
It is. We're talking high manganese content, 15 to 30%. A stable FCC structure. It doesn't use phase transformation for its ductility. It uses something called mechanical twinning.
Which means, in theory, it should be safer from this mechanism, right? It stays austenite. It stays as the sponge. The hydrogen should just stay put.
That was the prevailing theory. But manufacturers were seeing this terrifying phenomenon, delayed fracture.
And Ryu investigates this with a cup drawing test. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. It's a standard industrial test. They take a circular blank of this TYP steel and use a punch to deep draw it into the shape of a cup.
So lots of stress, lots of deformation.
Oh, yeah. And initially, the cups looked perfect. They come right out of the press, totally intact. But then Ryu just let them sit on a shelf, no external load, sitting there.
And 7 days later.
Cracks. Big splits right along the walls of the cup.
That is the nightmare scenario for an automaker. You ship a car part and it cracks a week later in the customer's driveway for no reason.
All right. So Ryu had to figure out why this supposedly stable austenite structure was failing. And he found, again, that adding aluminum solved the problem. The cups made with the alloyed steel didn't crack.
But the mechanism has to be different here. In TYP, the aluminum changed the ferrite to shield the austenite. But in 2WIP, there is no ferrite. It's all austenite.
You're right. So what is the aluminum doing?
Yeah.
It's changing the stacking fault energy, the SFE.
Okay, SFE is a term that gets thrown around a lot. Let's pin it down. It's basically the energy penalty the lattice has to pay to make a stacking error, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to put it. The FCC lattice is stacked in a specific ABC sequence. A stacking fault is a mistake, like ABAB. And that mistake, structurally, looks a lot like a different phase called epsilon martensite.
Which is hexagonal, close-packed, and very brittle.
Extremely brittle. Now, normally, the energy barrier to make this mistake is pretty high, but hydrogen is insidious. It actually lowers the SFE. It makes it cheaper, energetically, for the lattice to make these mistakes.
So the hydrogen is actively encouraging the formation of this brittle epsilon martensite phase, even in what's supposed to be a stable austenitic seal.
It does. But Ryu found a second factor, and this might be even more critical, the mechanical twins themselves. In these low SFE steels, when you deform them, you create these dense networks of twin boundaries.
And we normally think of twins as being good for ductility.
Mechanically, yes, but chemically.
Yeah.
Ryu's work showed that these twin boundaries act as superhighways for hydrogen transport. The interfaces have very high dislocation densities. Hydrogen can travel along these boundaries much, much faster than it can through the bulk lattice.
So in the standard TWIP alloy, you get a double whammy. Hydrogen lowers the SFE, which creates brittle spots of epsilon martensite.
And at the same time, the deformation creates these twin boundaries that act as a high-speed delivery service, piping hydrogen right to those brittle spots.
Creating a huge local concentration right where the material is weakest. That's why the cups cracked a week later. It took time for the hydrogen to travel along those highways.
Exactly. It had to commute and build up enough pressure.
So back to aluminum. How does it stop all this?
Right. It raises the SFE, But how? What's happening at the atomic level?
It really gets down to the electronic structure.
Yeah.
When you add aluminum to this iron manganese system, you're actually changing the d-electron interactions. It alters the magnetic state and the shear modulus of the lattice.
Okay.
Specifically, it increases the repulsive force between what are called partial dislocations, the edges of a stacking fault.
So if they repel each other more strongly, it becomes very energetically expensive to form a fault or a twin. Aluminum basically puts up a massive energy toll booth. It makes it physically much harder for the lattice to slip into that brittle hexagonal structure.
So by adding aluminum, Ryu raised the SFE enough to stop the formation of the brittle phase and stop the formation of the twin highways that delivered the hydrogen.
He cut off the transport route and reinforced the destination. The hydrogen was still in there, the solubility was still high, but it was stranded. It couldn't congregate, and it had nowhere brittle to attack.
A chemical fix versus the mechanical fix we saw in Trip Steel.
That's the perfect synthesis. For Trip, it was about managing stress distribution. For TWIP, it was about managing atomic bond energies.
There is a really interesting theme here, though. In both cases, the very improvement in the steel, the transformation in Trip, the twinning in TWIF, that was the exact thing that the hydrogen exploited.
That is the trade-off that engineering always faces, isn't it? We designed Trippy for that transformation, and hydrogen hijacked it. We designed 2YP for twinning, and hydrogen used the twins as its personal transit system.
It just suggests you can't design these alloys in a vacuum anymore. You can't just look at a stress-strain curve you made in dry air and call it a day.
Ryu's thesis is a powerful testament to that. He shows that you have to design the microstructure for the hydrogen environment. You have to assume the enemy is already inside the gates.
Which brings up a fascinating point about these traps. We started out talking about them as just defects, like potholes. But it seems some traps are better than others. Reversible versus irreversible traps.
The distinction is all about binding energy. A reversible trap, like a dislocation, holds hydrogen pretty weakly. A little bit of heat or stress, and the hydrogen just pops out and keeps moving.
And that's the mobile hydrogen that causes all the problems.
But an irreversible trap. Well, that's the real holy grail of hydrogen management.
Mm-hmm.
If you could create particles in the steel, say vanadium carbides or certain nanoprecipitates, that have such a high binding energy that they never let the hydrogen go.
You could essentially immunize the steel.
You turn the steel into a roach motel for hydrogen. It checks in, but it never checks out.
So it wouldn't even matter if hydrogen got in during manufacturing, because it would just get locked up immediately and permanently.
Right. And Ryu's work with aluminum in TOWIP steel, it isn't quite creating an irreversible trap, but it's manipulating the landscape so the hydrogen can't build up the momentum it needs to cause failure.
It's stabilizing the battlefield.
A great way to put it. It prevents those dynamic events,
uh-huh.
The phase changes, the twinning that concentrate the hydrogen and cause all the damage.
It really does challenge that static view of materials we have. You look at a piece of steel, you see a solid block, but listening to this, it feels more like a living organism. It's breathing hydrogen, it's transforming under pressure, it's reacting.
Yeah. It is an incredibly dynamic system. And as we push for lighter, stronger cars, we're pushing these materials closer and closer to their theoretical limits. And that means the margin for error for these little microscopic interactions, it just vanishes.
Well, Ryu's thesis basically hands the industry a roadmap. It says, look, if you want to use these advanced steels, you have to control strain partitioning and you have to control stacking fault energy.
It's not enough anymore to just mix iron and manganese and hope for the best. You're engineering the electronic interactions now.
Which is pretty incredible for something that eventually becomes a fender on a sedan.
It's the invisible complexity that keeps us safe.
Well, next time you see a dented bumper, maybe you'll have a little more appreciation for the atomic war that had to happen to keep it from shattering. Thanks for diving deep with us.
Always a pleasure to explore the lattice.
We'll catch you on the next one.